Sanda Symes is a trauma expert, executive mentor, and founder of the Global Ancestral Breathwork Journeys, as well as the creator of The Pivot, a neuroscience-rooted methodology designed for high-functioning women who are ready to lead from regulation, not reactivity. With over 40 years of experience, Sand has helped thousands of women rewire nervous system patterns, integrate sacred medicine journeys, and reclaim their ancestral power. Her work bridges internal family systems, somatics, sacred ritual, and trauma science, creating tangible, embodied results. Thanks for being here. Let's dive into the episode.
Are you obsessed with the mystic? Are you looking for sisterhood? Are you ready to explore your inner magic? You've arrived, sister. Welcome home. I'm Maureen Spielman, and I started this show to highlight the intuitives, healers, and other courageous women I have met along my journey. Through amazing interviews, we go deep into the mystics and uncover the ways in which you can apply the knowledge and wisdom in your own life. We are all in this together. Sharing healing and joy in community is both my passion and my purpose. Here's today's conversation.
Welcome back to Mystical Sisterhood. This is your host, Maureen Spielman. And today I'm so gratefully sitting with Sand Symes. She is coming to the podcast via Henna LaPlaca, who was a guest just a couple months ago. And we'll include her episode in the show notes. But I'm always grateful for someone suggesting a guest that they love, whom they've worked with. Because there's just something about that connection, and especially into the mystical sisterhood, that I feel makes it really, it creates a connective tissue. I'm going to say a few words about you, Sand. You are a trauma expert. You're an executive mentor and the founder of the Global Ancestral Breathwork Journeys, which I have done one time with you, and we're going to talk about that today, as well as the creator of The Pivot, which is a neuroscience-rooted methodology designed for high-functioning women who are ready to lead from regulation of the nervous system, not reactivity. So you've had over 40 years of experience, which is just so phenomenal, and helped thousands of women rewire their nervous system, integrate sacred medicine journeys, and reclaim this ancestral power. I know that you have many tools you've cultivated, which I feel makes you the perfect person to be sitting here, because we need the tools for our daily life. So that being said, you know, that beautiful bio that only touches the surface, I first and foremost, I want to say welcome.
I'm so happy to be here, Maureen. Thank you so much. Gorgeous introduction. Thank you. So happy.
Yes. And I know that we're just going to have, it's a healing space we're creating. And we just kind of set an intention, which, you know, I don't record those, but they end up being so beautiful that it is an offering that may be worth, you know, in the future recording. But I think that in the intention you shared, this aspect of women having a space to share their lived experiences, share what they've been through, share their wisdom. Can you say more about that? And is that intentionality what drives your work?
It's a great question. I think the place to start in my work is always let's look at what has been. So if we turn and we look at the past, and we know many women that get drawn into circle work or get drawn into, even if it's personal development, I am this version of myself and I'm looking to be this version of myself. So we want movement. Well, that alone is demonstrating evolution at its most basic. It's like, I want to evolve into the next version of myself. And as women from thousands of years ago, that's where we got our nutritive soup from. That's what we got our nourishing from, was from each other, from other women. Over the last several thousands of years, we've moved so far away, and you know this more in yourself personally and all the women that I know that you connect with. We have moved so massively away from being with other women. We've learned how to disconnect from ourselves and the earth. We've learned how to disconnect from each other. We've learned how to not trust other women. We've learned how to gossip about other women. We've learned how to survive with other women. Example, quick example. My example was I learned how to smoke because the cool girls on the back of the school bus were smokers. So I learned how to smoke because my desperation to belong wanted to be with the cool girls, and learn how to bitch and gossip about other girls or the high school because I so desperately was so unworthy of my own existence, and I so was desperately wanting to be seen by this group of girls that I believe were the coolest kids on the block. And that's just one small example, but that small example shape-shifted my life as it does for many women. The first time I sat in a woman's circle, not the back of the bus, but a woman's circle, and the women shared, the ones who had been together for a number of years, when I first heard how they were profoundly sharing their vulnerability, it terrified me that first time. And I hid once again behind the cool girls on the bus, kind of demonstrated this cool girl persona and this facade, because I was terrified of being judged by my peer group. I was terrified of being, banished. I was terrified of being abandoned, which is one of our oldest wounds that we carry in our humanity. So I didn't speak for three rounds of being in that woman's circle. I didn't speak, and they graciously allowed you to pass if you didn't want to speak. And so I said, not right now. And I did pass because I was trying to figure out who I was in that circle, who other women were in that circle, were the women that terrified me, the women that I wanted to be like, the women that I admired. And I was doing what we do as women, is assessing that situation, just like my 14-year-old self was assessing the cool girls on the back of the bus. So in that assessment over thousands of years, we have learned to assess badly, poorly, distortion, how we assess other women in our field. And it's only at this time in our, truly en masse, this time in this iteration of this generation of our human beings on the earth, that women for the first time ever en masse are coming together to trust each other again, because we've forgotten how to trust. And you've got, history will say it was the witch wound. We want to kind of get excited about the witch wound. The witch wound, we threw each other under the bus. We actually literally threw each other onto the fire or threw each other into the river. But it came from way beyond that, way before that. It literally came when we started to separate from ourselves, the mother, our feminine identity as woman, as feminine.
And how far? Well, first of all, that was all so beautiful and layered, because you took what is an example that we can all visualize. We can see you, we can see that 14, 15, 16 year old girl. And what immediately comes to mind is like, oh, that's so interesting. What was I doing to watch and assess? And what coping mechanisms did I use to not feel and to remain separate? And so that's fascinating, because I think every woman individual listening to this recording will see themselves in that. And how layered you showed the process of, like, oh, how eloquently, and that's that gift of storytelling, right? Which is, was around the fire too, but coming forward, and that the power of story, and how you just shared with us, like, oh, and we brought into your adult self, or what you thought was operating from the adult self. And then you began the healing. So that's all fascinating. And I'm thinking, like, when you just said the separation from self, like, when you say that, how far back are you thinking? Like, when did that begin for us?
So depending on which lens you would look at this, so from different prophets of our time, from different spiritual components, and the ultimate separation is when we separated, what one would say, from God, from the universe, from the truth, from soul. So when we separated meaning, when we believed that this was the only iteration of ourself, in other words, I am born, I have a life, and I die, and that's it, game over. And I know that billions of people believe that particular story. That's one of the strongest narratives inside of our human existence is, I am here, I'm born, and then I have this life, and then I die. And that is, deeply, deeply wired throughout our history, throughout our evolution. So with the rising of consciousness on the earth, we have more, there is more consciousness being measured. There's more consciousness on the earth now than it's ever been kind of like classically recorded in this iteration of our humanity. So then we can get a little bit woo and we can say, okay, are we the only humanity that has ever had right. existence on this earth? And it's like, ooh, how far do your listeners go with this one? So I'm going to put things down and let me say, I should say this at the beginning, whatever I put down today for all of your listeners, for your community, Maureen, let them pick up, please pick up what resonates and just leave the rest behind.
You sounds know, perfect. Yeah.
It's like, it's a point of view. Okay. Because I can't prove that God exists in a particular way that you want to prove God exists. So when we can get a little bit bending, let's bend our consciousness, let's bend some of our thinking, let's bend some of the narrative, just like we bent our narrative when we thought the world was flat. And then it's like, holy shit, the world isn't flat. Huge narrative that kind of completely came into our very existence of, oh my God, we don't fall off the end of, you know, the Pacific Ocean when we kind of go that far with a boat. And that was less than 600 years ago that most people on the planet believed that the world was flat, only 600 years ago. So if we can bend that, and some people on the earth right now still believe the earth is flat and believe that it's propaganda. Nobody's ever really taken a photograph of the earth being round. That's a lie. And if that's you, that's your truth. And let's rejoice that that's your truth. So if we can bend a little bit more and say, when did we separate? It's one of the biggest questions that debaters, philosophers have held. It's even bigger than the debate of nurture and nature. Meaning, when did I exist? Because it's inside of our DNA. It's the ultimate story inside of our DNA. Our narrative is, who am I?
Right.
And it's like, who am I as a baby? Who am I? Can I start to walk? Who am I now that I'm not a baby crawling on the floor? Who am I as I get a little bit older and I see a sense of self? Who am I as I start to explore the world outside of my parents' map of the world or my caregiver's map of the world or the adults around me that gave me the map of their world? Who am I as I start to break that down and ask, do I believe this now when I get to a certain age? So yeah. Evolution by its very existence and science is always saying, we're questioning, who am I now? What do I now believe in? What I wanted and I thought was great at 16, do I still believe that that's, you know, great? And do I want those things at 60? Where is the evolution in that? So back to your question, when did we first, what is this ultimate story or myth, which is, who am I? And if I, who am I? I am, therefore I exist. Where did I come from? And the ultimate story that I believe in, certainly with plant medicines and done, I've sat in over 160 ceremonies now over all these years, the plants, the sacredness, the intelligence of the universe, how it amplifies this existence that is around us, that immediately takes you away from yourself, the little self. Who I thought I am as this woman on the earth, eating dirt, crying, looking at all the parts that are my existence, and being told over and over and over again, without fail, every single ceremony I've had is the same through line, Maureen, which is, you are beyond who you think you are in your existence. So I bring that to the table. I can't prove that that exists. I can only bring my experiences to the table, that I exist beyond who I think myself is as a woman called Sand, who I thought I was in this physical body. When I've met myself outside of my body hundreds of times in sacred medicine, in meditation, in breath work, we don't even have to sit with sacred medicines. But outside of that, that I know that I exist with the wind, I exist with this tree, I exist with Maureen. Mm-hmm. Your pain is my pain, your journey is my journey. And if we say that the deepest pain also in our humanity is that we are separate from each other.
Wow.
So if we separated from existence here to have, from soul, to have a human experience on this earth for separation, and we've done this many times, and I know many of your listeners, they won't be listening to it. That's not the word mystical in it if they weren't open.
That's right.
For hearing this. So we've been here many times. And each time we get the opportunity to know ourselves outside of the existence of who we think we are. And we also get chance to come back in that place. It gets the tears is we're not separate from other. And that's truly the biggest, most powerful narrative of all that creates the most suffering on our earth is I am separate from you. I am separate from your religion. I'm separate from your country. I'm separate from your gender. I am separate from you, but that I'll judge that to be better than in some way. And that's where the
Absolutely.
pain is. That's where the
Yeah.
suffering is.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love how you're bringing up that through plant medicine, sacred medicine, through breath work, through how do you think of it, that allowance of we are so much more, we are one, I've heard it described different ways too. Is that allowance, does it allow us to witness ourselves more to then because we one experiences the expansiveness, then the things that kept us so tight and constricted from our conditioning, they are just, it feels like it's a spiritual release that happens. 'Cause I'm trying to think like, okay, like it is this all the levels that it can occur on? Is that how you think of it?
Great question.
I know it's so big, but it's so important too to
Yeah.
kind of break down.
I think the magnitude of it can just stop somebody in the tracks immediately. And it's like, for a lot of your audience right now, it's like, oh, this conversation's going esoterical now. This is hey girl, I'm in pain right now. Hey woman, I thought I was going to get some great, stories and help and support with my trauma or my family patterns. So please don't go to the universe and to the stars too much. Those could be some of the listeners that are listening right now. So I want to serve the expansiveness and then bring it straight back into the application of what on earth are you guys talking about, and how can I apply that to my 3D human existence to create a better life for myself in some way? Yeah. So if I share my experience, I came to plant medicine because I opened that door because I wanted to heal the trauma that I knew that my physical, emotional, and mental body was carrying from my own childhood. I was a social worker at the time, a practicing social worker. And for many years in social work, especially with the incredible souls that I had the privilege to work with, you can't help but to compare your life with the pocket of people that I'm working with. So I denied my own trauma. I denied my own abuse. I denied the cycles that were running through my own immediate generations of my parents and my grandparents, of that generational trauma that was being handed down to us as children. And by this point, I had my own two children. So I wanted, and I started to see the generational trauma moving through. So that caught me in my tracks of, and most people that end up coming, I think, into any kind of work with somebody like me or into plant medicine work, if we're a mama or a papa bear, the door we open will have our kids' names on that door without question. And it's like, I don't care how you get through, to the other side to find people like me or to come into your own healing. Use your children as the very, because they're here to open and wake us up in that way.
Absolutely.
So when I first came into medicine work, it was to really take a deep look at my own trauma without being in a container of comparing it to the people that I was working with at the time, which was, heightened substance misuse. It was women in incarceration. It was eating disorders. It was every single piece. It was genitalia mutilation. It was poverty at a scale that I hadn't lived in my life. So every service user that we were working with, every soul I was working with, I was comparing. Well, my dad just, beat us every now and again, and that's okay. I've had a lovely life, and it was like I kept denying myself of my own trauma. And yet I had an incredible supervisor. Social workers, as some people may or may not know, is a supervised profession, meaning you always have a supervisor to look after your mental state, to make sure that you're still good enough and you still got it together to go out into the world to work with some of our most vulnerable clients and vulnerable souls on the planet. Have you got enough to be in service to them? So I started initially in therapy, and I was in therapy for about 8 months. And then I got an opportunity from a friend of mine to sit in my very first ayahuasca experience in Amsterdam, which now was, that was 25 years ago. So in that first medicine, my intention was show me the trauma that I carry, that I'm in denial about, show me where it comes from, and show me what is mine and what is not mine, and show me what I can do with it. So be careful what you ask for, be careful what you pray for. So I was taken on an incredible journey at that my first experience, Maureen, and I was shown all the different patterns inside of me, inside of my parents, inside of grandparents, and then eventually throughout our whole humanity. So the medicine allowed me to see trauma as patterns, as literally physical patterns, patterns that I could see through the medicine, patterns that I could see as a little girl, because I have a seeing energy as well. And I saw patterns around people which I didn't quite understand what they were. And they were sharing with me these patterns of the human existence that you're seeing, some that you will call trauma, some that you'll call gifts, some that you'll call medicine, some that you'll call qualities. But these patterns will stay if that being believes the pattern. And keep demonstrating the pattern and keep manifesting the pattern. So we then know that is the same pattern over and over and over again that we are carrying. And for many of us, we don't see them as patterns. We think it's life just being life. So when I came to the medicine for that first time and was shown trauma, it gave me two things. It gave me an enormous relief to a part of me, because I work with internal family systems, as you know. So it gave massive relief to the part of me that thought I was flawed or damaged or bad, that I've got all of this trauma, therefore I am bad. I have all this trauma, therefore I'm a bad person. It allowed me to see that way beyond the intellectual understanding through social work training that I'd had of course nobody's bad. Of course we've all got these parts. But that was an intellectual understanding. So she gave me my first gift, and she brought me straight back into my own body of intelligence and said, if you're looking for forgiveness and understanding, it starts here. And you cannot use the mental mind, the mental body for transformation. And you cannot use the mental plane and the mental body for forgiveness. And you cannot use the mental plane for anything that you're trying to move through for healing, because you'll only get so far. But the true transformation, the true healing, the fullness, the sustainable part of it is actually in your body. So find the trauma that still exists in your body. And she showed me my patterns of that got triggered when I felt I was that little girl and I was getting beaten by my dad again. Oh, I have a pattern. If I get bigger than the person who's loud, if I go louder, then that's a pattern. Oh, that's a trauma response. That's me fighting back. I'm now in fight. Or if they're really scary as hell, I'll go into freeze and my little girl is terrified in the middle of, in the middle of the room because dad's screaming and shouting and beating one of his kids. So now I'm in this other trauma response of the freeze. So I was allowed to see the trauma responses as we know as the four Fs, the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, but where they were inside of me. Oh, it hits you in your solar plexus and it hits you in your stomach. You carry your anger in the jaw, your hands start to clutch again. So she started to show me somatically where the trauma lived in my body as soon as the triggers started to happen, which immediately took me to 3, 4 months in utero when if my dad was shouting at my mum when she was pregnant with me, then I, as the utero child, would be ripping myself inside of the womb. So inside of my mum, when my mum was inside her mother's womb, so now we're on a journey of matriarchal line. Oh, this journey of the male in the family is louder, more powerful, and is the authority of this room, of this home, of this woman's body. The man is in the authority. So here we're now in the swimming sea of patriarchy. So, wow, how far back did I have to go to see all the women in my matriarchal lineage who were terrified at one level of the man in the room? So
Huge.
that authority, we give away the three A's. So your woman should write this down. How
Yeah.
we write, how we lose our autonomy, our authority, and our authenticity. So those three A's, we are trading those A's all the time. And nobody in school told us to get three A's in
No.
authority, autonomy, or authenticity. They went, get your A in English, get it in history, get it in
Oh,
physics.
so true. Yes.
So
Yeah.
in full circle to that, which it's so the trauma said, it's not what you think and it's not where you think it is, because it's not in your head and it's not in your memory. Well, it is, but you have to go further back and understand your lineage of how trauma lives inside of the female body when
Okay.
you're up against something that is scared you or fearful you. You will immediately, see, I'm shivering. You'll
Yeah.
immediately kick in all of your matriarchal lineage. This is in one lifetime, by the way.
Wow.
So every lifetime we've ever had, those patterns are still inside of us. And in this lifetime, in this particular humanity's lifetime, because there's more consciousness on the planet now than ever, ever before in this human existence, we have an opportunity, Maureen, to slow down and check
Right.
in. And go, wow, there is a framework. Internal family systems is a framework. Sand has got the pivot. That's a framework. I don't know what to do, Sand, with all of this now, because I just saw it and felt it through my matriarchal line. So how do I start to work through that
Yeah.
in this lifetime so that I become freer and more in my body,
Yes.
authority,
Yeah.
autonomy, and authenticity? So
Wow.
that's some of the backstory of trauma of being in. I was in so much denial, and I didn't use the word abuse until I was 42 years old, and I went into social work in my early 20s.
Wow,
I didn't see it
yes.
that long. It was like, oh, my dad hit us, beat us, but it's okay, and kept minimizing,
Yeah.
minimizing, minimizing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we do. It becomes a story that we tell, and it's in a neat box, and it might be kind of messy too, but we don't know what to do with it. So I love how you're sharing this. It's living within our body, and we have these telltales are these different responses we have. Because I think, you know, when we before we recorded and you said like what's applicable, what's, you know, useful for the audience, and you do talk a lot about that, the nervous system response, and are we in flight, are we fleeing, freezing, or fawning? And when we begin to see ourselves or feel ourselves more apropos, there are different breathwork techniques we can do, but how about going into that territory a little bit? Because I know that, you know, we talked about like even later, but I want to weave things because you're so beautifully talking about, you know, sacred medicine. You're talking about, because that's a whole field when you're talking about this matriarchal lineage. I want to go to the techniques in a second, but what you're saying is so incredibly profound. I think that, you know, like I said, you'll be episode 140. I feel like even in the last, I don't know, 4 months, it's not 6 months, I've been hearing more about the ancestral. And maybe that's sort of in step with the consciousness rising. Like all of a sudden, you know, you hear something once, but then you hear it 10 times. And then you think like, well, what is that? And how is that for me? But that's just what I was thinking about before we recorded was that, like you said, we do think I was born on July 14th, 1969, and who knows what the date I'll die and everything in between and nothing really more. We just do these things. We go to school, we get the A's, we get the job. But it's just I think it's incredibly freeing to think like, oh, it's not just me. Like I am carrying so much more. Like that can feel heavy too. But to me, it feels like almost like, oh, this is because we have those ways of making ourselves broken
Yes.
because we can't transcend our challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, like I guess I'm bringing up, it could be personal. Everyone's going to feel differently. But for me, it's like, oh, wow, it's not just me. It's
It's not
not
just
just
me.
me. And that's part of the reason it feels so hard.
It's not just me. It's not my fault. You know, is a huge one to for women to hear that for the first time. It's like, it's not your fault. And they're like, no, but I did this and I did this and I messed up here and I was shitty over here and I laid into this person and I didn't hold it together in the boardroom and I'm so and then and as women we still continue to internalize as if, you know, we immediately go to it's my fault. So I'll demonstrate this with two stories, which I hope could be helpful. So in my work with women, let me I work with incredibly successful women. And their success, I love working and I'm in awe of the women that I end up working with. And they are incredibly successful. And as we move up the incredibly successful ladder, and we can be incredibly successful as a mum, as an artist, as a teacher, as a researcher, as a brain surgeon. So please to all the audience, success is the fact that you're living life every day. Is a success, right? So the women that I work with, because they are working with some of them hundreds of people, some thousands and some tens of thousands. So one of the ways that I work with them is if this woman can be even more free with her own autonomy, authenticity, and authority, then she can move mountains in these big agencies, in these big organizations. In corporate America or Meta or Amazon, wherever, you know, they end up finding me. And here's what happens. The higher up the ladder in success we go, the bigger and louder the voice of the imposter is. So the imposter is always with us down here. And it's like there's the internal family systems, let's call it the voice of imposter. It's like, where's your voice of imposter? And the imposter tends to be a very young child still living inside our 30, 40, 50, 60, 70-year-old plus body, right? So it's I'm an imposter. So I was an imposter smoking cigarettes on the back, right? I'm totally an imposter back there. I'm like, oh my God, give me the cigarette. I can't smoke. It's vile. I hate it, but I'm going to do it because I so want to be with you, Kirk. It's on the
Absolutely.
back of the bus. So as we go up that ladder, it's like imposter, imposter, imposter. So that's a big one that women have. So I'll use this one example, and all of the examples that I use, obviously the women will be anonymous, but each one, so your audience knows, have given me permission to share this part of their story with people. So that's my old social worker hat being that
Yes.
I got permission. Can I do this? Do I have permission? So one of the women I work with just over a year ago was. This woman was so in her body, in her vibe, in her authenticity, authority, and authenticity, authority, and autonomy in the workplace. She was moving board people. She was moving billions of dollars. She was creating. She was like she was like this. She was like moving an orchestra, right? She was there. She was had a stick, a bibbity bobbity boo, I used to call it, and she would move things. Nothing fazed her. So at first, when I first started working with her, it was like, what is the story then? What's the underlining thing here? And of course, it wasn't in the workplace, it was at home. So at home, one particular look from her husband would have her immediately, she would move from her beautiful 45-year-old, powerful, successful self into a 5-year-old little girl with one look. And loved her husband loved her, right? So what was this look? And this look that she felt that she had no authority, no autonomy, and no authenticity. So she didn't know to ask for what she wanted. She couldn't find her no at times when she wanted to find her no. So she was overriding her own authority, autonomy, and authenticity in her body, kept overriding, overriding. And her husband didn't even know she was doing this. So they never had that conversation at that point on, I'm actually an imposter right now because you think you're speaking to 45-year-old, you know, super vibe, super amazing woman, but you're actually speaking to my 5-year-old self. And it was the look that her father gave her and the look her father used to give to her mother of his disapproval. You've not done enough. Where is your you I need so as the mother, one of the deepest cuts that we have inside of a woman is the mother-daughter wound and the daughter-father wound. So in the father-daughter wound, it tends to be not exclusively, but it tends to be, I am seeking approval from whoever we believe as a little girl has got the biggest authority in the room. And if you brought up, like most of us were, that the authority in the room was the man, was the father, we will always lean in to that particular approval. So we want the love of the mother, but we want the approval of the father. So that look that she got, and her husband didn't even know he was doing that look. So if we can go a little bit woo here, well, it's not woo actually. I'm going to ground it in real stuff. In all of our OGs of our couples, like authority out there, from the Gottmans to Terry Reels to the Hendricks, every one of them says to some degree, you marry a version of your parent, right? And nobody likes to hear that. It's like, no, I don't want to marry my father. Are you kidding me? And I don't want to marry my mother. Oh my God, are you kidding me? But we marry into the patterns. And the patterns, so remember back to the patterns, everything is a pattern. So the facial expression of said husband was a pattern that this woman, 45 years old, triggered in her 5-year-old self. He doesn't approve. So if he doesn't approve, 5-year-old little girl wakes up inside of the body, screaming. Now she's in that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. She's triggered. She doesn't, sometimes the 45-year-old woman doesn't even know this is happening, but doesn't understand why she can't find her no to the man she loves and the man who loves her. This is not an abusive relationship, but why can I not tell him the truth? And why can I, where is my no here? Because you're actually talking that your 5-year-old has taken over your body, your 5-year-old is triggered, and your 5-year-old is pleasing dad's face that is now enmeshed in your husband's facial expression. So when we started to unpick that and unpack that, that became our work together at the deepest, deepest place. So from that, and what that particular woman had to face inside of herself, we had to go through the whole, the shame, the story, the guilt. Oh my God, what's wrong with me? Oh my God, I should be able to tell my husband. He loves me. I love him. And it's like, well, let's slow it all down and really look at what's happening in this room, whether it's a bedroom, whether it's your bank account, whether it's she wouldn't spend money because once her husband questioned, said, how much for that pair of shoes? And she was like, that's it, shut it down, don't buy shoes again. And I'm not, I'm inviting everyone to buy shoes here. But it was a look, this look that her husband had immediately internalized the story. My husband doesn't approve to a 5-year-old little girl inside, and I will now seek his approval, and I will override my own authority, autonomy, and authenticity to please said husband, who's now actually my father, to my 5-year-old self.
Oh, wow. I love the way that you gave the example and went layer, 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 because I'm thinking of looks I've received, or I'm thinking of someone I know who just from the look alone might shut down like that. Like it's just the, what's put out there. I was going to say too, with the, because I love to weave in what we're seeing with consciousness rising. So is it safe to say then our mothers, our grandmothers, they didn't have this information? Like in a way, I see this work. It's so, like they use that word profound before, but it's very deep. And it's such, oh my gosh, like we get to do this work now. And that is beauty, because what happens when our generation takes it on?
That's right. You absolutely nailed it. So if we've got, so again, let's use the woo, and then we'll bring it down
Bring
to
it down.
3D and well. Okay, Sand, you're saying there's more consciousness on the planet. How do you know this? And it's like, I know it from my biggest teachers, which are the plant medicines, so who have shown me in no uncertain terms what's happening here on planet Earth. And then how do I apply? How do I come back from a journey like that and then apply it to my own life? So even if we don't, even if we say, don't give me the story of high of consciousness, give me the real story in a clinical model, in an ancestral model, in what's real for me. And you nailed it, Maureen. We are the first generation en masse, meaning there's more of us in this generation that can do the work, that has got the intelligence, that has got the knowledge, that have got now the longing, that we could, the freedom. I mean, are you kidding me? We have got, for women now, we have the freedom of our own bank accounts for some of us. And I know that's not true, certainly not true of the rest of the world. Women are still a property in certain places of the world. So, but there's more women now that have got their own autonomy through their own bank account, their own validation through their own sense of worth, their own access now to cell phones and computers, to courses, to oh my God, I'm doing yoga. Why did I burst into tears when I, lay down at the end of a yoga class? Because your body is releasing ancestral trauma here. My God, I'm gonna stuff it down though and stick my head in my sweater, because Paris says I'm in a yoga class, but you just open your body to all of these moves. So your somatic body is releasing itself. Thank God for the class, if we know the class, which was one of the first, the first iterations of taking women through fitness and allowing yourself to cry, allowing yourself to scream. So the class, capital T, capital C, the class, check it out. Is wonderful because they were allowing women to start moving, and we weren't in these bodies where we stopped ourselves from having emotions because we decided that we should be doing a yoga pose because everybody else has done a yoga pose. And if I fall over doing a tree, everybody's going to laugh at me. So I'm going to grip my toes into the mat and not let myself feel anything because I'm supposed to be in a pose rather than feeling the energy that's moving through my body. So sorry, I just digressed in a yoga class then. Back to your point, we as women, we're doing yoga. We've got intelligence, we've got access to funds, to technology, to teachers, to all it. We have never, ever in this history of our humanity as women had so much direct access to truth tellers, to teachers that are allowing us as women to wake up inside of ourselves to hear something and go, that resonates. I'm not quite sure I believe some of what San's saying, but I can believe other things that she's saying. So again, I'm shivering here. All my ancestors are here. It's almost like we have a duty of care to every ancestor that's ever walked on this earth, for the mothers that didn't have the voice, for the ones that couldn't, and they didn't know. That we are that ancestor that they've been waiting for. And I have to be careful with this because we have to be careful of the martyr, because we don't want the martyr part. Like, I'm here to change the world. I'm doing this for my ancestors. If that opens the door, I'm doing it for my ancestors, great. If you're on your healing journey, your awakening journey, because first narrative is I'm doing it for my ancestors, great. Just come through the freaking door with that, with the same stickers that got your kids' names on them. Come through the door. But don't feel it's a burden. Don't pick that up as a burden that I'm doing this for my ancestors, because we've got to be careful of just a caveat there. Be careful. Don't pick up the martyr. Do it for yourself first. And that, if you do it for yourself first, don't care about even your kids and your ancestors. You have just broken major, 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 major generational patterns because you're a woman that said, I'm actually doing this for me first. That's the most powerful door you can walk through. We don't tend to walk through that door first. We have kids' stickers on it, kids' names on it, ancestors. I'm doing it for the world. I'm doing it to make a better place. I don't care. All of those doors, they all lead to the same door, which eventually you'll say, I'm doing it for myself. And as you to have that just in one lifetime, your ancestors, which is what medicine people and shamans and medicine people on the planet have known for all of time. Whatever we do in this lifetime, it has an effect on every one of our ancestors that's walked this earth before us, and for every ancestor that's yet to come.
It's
And they used to say 7 generations, which was unfathomable, but it's beyond 7 generations. It's from existence to existence.
amazing.
It's everything. So please, just do the work. And your ancestors, FYI, didn't just hand us toxicity and stories of patterns of toxicity. Our ancestors gave us the one of the biggest, most powerful medicines of all, which was resilience. And again, they always give me much. If we understand on whose shoulders we stand on, again, the resilience that our ancestors had to go through, whether we liked them or not, whether they were part of our abusive story or not, They still, my father was angry, lonely, sad man because his mother literally gave him away at 7 years old. My dad didn't know how to get love any other way but being loud and aggressive because his little boy wanted love. And so when he had was married to my mom, and mom was all about love and hugs, he was jealous. His little boy was jealous because he didn't know how to get love, how to ask for love in a powerful way until right at the end. And just so I can finish this story, me and my dad, and before he died, did tremendous work with each other for forgiveness. So my dad is a beautiful, beautiful soul. He was in a body that had very, very, very painful parts and didn't know how to keep five kids in check without, demonstrating some pretty aggressive behavior. And he asked for our forgiveness, many, many times before he died. We don't all get that opportunity, but I did. So back to your generational things, Maureen, it is, we're doing it because we are the first generation ever to have access to our own healing journey, our own narrative.
So many things come to mind. I know we're kind of towards the end of our time together, but it strikes me, I just want to reflect back to you that you're also the perfect example of what you're describing, the clients who come through you. Because when you look back at yourself and what you didn't know before you knew, and maybe you, I'm sure you had so many inklings before your mentor said to you, you've got some work to do, but I see. Then you stepped into an arena you had not known before of sacred plant medicine. And I sometimes feel like, and I see women right now, and I think of even me doing this podcast, I'm like your client where my work is in my home and it's in the playing field here too, but I allowed the voice within to guide me forward and almost begin before I even knew what was going to come. So I feel like women have this beautiful, this rising right now around, I'm going to test some limits here. I'm going to, and even that the bravery and the courage to come into a space with you to, I've had women show up in this podcast that have never had an interview before. Like the allowance of, I'm going to give myself permission to explore. And so, I mean, it's just all such gorgeous work, and I'm so grateful to have you share just these pieces and the stories and your own path you've traveled. It's beautiful.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you. I
Yeah,
appreciate that.
you're
Thank
so
you.
welcome. I don't know what you want to add here or share here, but I know it's also your intention to possibly share a takeaway of a nervous system regulation, if you feel, or however you word it, Sand, if you feel yourself reacting, if you feel yourself want my pattern going to isolate, if you feel these things, what are some somatic exercises or breathwork techniques that one could use?
I'm going to give you the easiest ones to remember and sometimes the hardest ones to execute. So when we're triggered, the body is basically saying, parts of the body is saying, I'm not safe, I'm no longer safe. So if we even know that, like, oh, I'm triggered, my body isn't safe. There's voices inside of me that isn't safe. Putting one hand on your body tends to be the heart, or it can be the womb, sometimes the belly for women. Sometimes it can be a hand on heart and a hand on belly. And if we can practice that and practice it, let's, give ourselves, let's make the practice work for us. And I do this with my clients. If somebody cuts you up on the freeway and you have a thought about that, you have a point of view of how that person is driving, you're triggered. You've got a point of view. You're already feeling angry, or, this is not okay. Put a hand on your heart, even while you're driving, and just say, it's okay. It's okay. That hand to the heart, here's why it's so simple, so powerful, and yet so challenging to remember to do. When the body feels unsafe, the last place it wants us to be, all the parts want us to be, is in the body. So the body's saying, I'm not safe, I'm not safe. I've got a point of view about him. Go after him. It's road rage, right? Somebody cuts you up. That 5-year-old little boy who's a 40-year-old man and a 3-year-old little boy whose big brother took all his toys off him, who's now a 50-year-old man, are driving on a freeway in insane speeds because now they want to fight. It's a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old that's got hold of a steering wheel of a vehicle that could take us out at any minute. So anytime we're triggered, there is a younger version of us inside. So the body is saying, go after, be over there, make sure you protect yourself. And you said, I withdraw, so I can either withdraw, I can fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. I'll withdraw, go away, I'll freeze, I'm not going to say anything, I'll fawn. Oh, it's okay, everything's happy, I'm okay, I'll get my tambourine out, I'll spiritually woo-woo myself away from this situation. I'll fight it, or I'll freeze, so all the F's come in. Putting your hand on your body is literally like having all of your thousands and thousands and thousands of your ancestors in your hand. That's putting them on the body
Gorgeous.
for every woman that was never allowed to slow down and put a hand on her own body and say, it's okay. This pattern is ancestral. This trigger is not who you are. It's okay. And if we don't want to go that far, that it's ancestral, just placing a hand on our own body immediately triggers the nervous system, the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve says, okay, you guys, she's a big queen in the body. She's like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. Hang on a minute. She can't be that triggered if she's put a hand on her body. Because if she's that triggered, she normally withdraws, fights, flight, freeze, or fawn. So hang on a minute, vagus nerve says to the body. She puts one hand on her body, she's okay. So the whole of the nervous system starts immediately to calm down just by placing a hand on your own body. And then the
Gorgeous.
vagus nerve says, we're still freezing over here, we're still a bit triggered, but we know I can be triggered, and biggest teaching of all, and I can be triggered and regulated. I can feel the feelings of being scared or angry or upset or frustrated, and I can still put a hand on my body.
So, whereas when you begin that process, your reaction, your ego is taking over, the more we practice, the more we practice, the
That's
more
right.
we practice,
That's right.
then the balance can shift. That's
That's
what it
right.
feels like. Okay,
That's
that's
right. That's
gorgeous.
right. And here, because our human body wants us to be, it doesn't want us to wait years, and it doesn't want us to be in therapy for 10, 20 years, right? So the body's saying, put your hand on me, put your hand on me, practice this, and within a few weeks, you will start to notice the difference because you are not flooding your body anymore with the old trigger. Your brain isn't connecting all of its tissue and its neurons with the old patterning that go, oh, I know what you do now. You withdraw. I know what you do now. You get in a car and drive away. I know what you do now. You scream and shout. I know what you do now. You cry, all of the old patterns that don't serve us. And we might still be in a car driving away, but we've got a hand on our chest. Still be withdrawing and going into a different room, but we've got a hand on our chest. We can't find the words at the beginning. Practice before you're triggered. When I put my hand on my chest here, my heart, just know I'm anchoring this in. I am safe. I'm okay. I'm safe. I'm okay. And if I do this, I don't need words because when I'm triggered, I can't find my words because my prefrontal cortex is shut down. I'm flooded with the limbic brain is flooded with emotional, with all the emotions. But I can put a hand on my heart. I can do this. I know I can do this. My sovereignty is here. My freedom is here. My authority, autonomy, and authenticity is right here, putting a hand on
Beautiful.
my heart when I'm triggered. So
Oh.
that's the first thing.
Okay.
Practice that. The second one is find your parts. Really find the voice that's saying I'm scared. Find, like my client, she didn't realize her 5-year-old self was looking at the expression of her husband, didn't know because she's still in her body, right? She hadn't done internal family systems work. So when we slowed it down, it's like when we could ask the questions, who is it in your body that's saying, I need to get approval from this person over here? And immediately, it's immediate, your body says, oh my God, that's my dad. Oh my God, I'm in my little pink dress at my 5-year-old party. I was coming in, I was so happy. My dad looked at me as I was sticking my finger in my own birthday cake. He looked at me, gave me that look, and I've had weight issues for the last 25 years because of that, which was another client story of finding approval from the father, because she had ice, a birthday cake on the finger, and the approved disapproving look of the father. I'm now in and out of some really unhealthy behavior around my own autonomy, around my body, because I'm still waiting for my dad's approval to tell me I'm beautiful enough and good enough in the body that I'm in, and it's okay for me to ram a full piece of bloody cake in my mouth if I want.
It's such a that's such a good example, because one of the intentions that I've held for myself for years, I think, was, oh, the way I show up with, let's say, my sisters, where I'm more relaxed and I want to be, or the where Maureen is the most relaxed, the most in her authority, in her, right? I want to be that in all situations. Yet, even with your client, the when she morphed into that 5-year-old self, it's like it doesn't equate to us. We just, but and then that's where these skills become so important, because then we, oh, that's a younger version of myself, a younger part. That
That's right.
okay,
That's right. And those younger versions, because that's what we do as human nature, we take on the emotional labor of the room at that time. So we internalize everything that's happening with our parents. So I've got another example. I don't know why I'm being given this nudge to share this. One of my clients, her mum, when her mum was overwhelmed, she would take to her bed. So it was like, I'm overwhelmed, so I'm going to go to bed. So that was happening there. So, and then from the earliest age, that mother, she started to emulate that from her mum. And the next thing was, mum is taking these pills and telling herself that these pills are really good pills, and mum's taking pills, that these pills, what are those, mummy? Oh, these help mummy feel good. These help mummy, this is what I, this is helps mummy feel good and look good. Slimming pills. So at the age of 11, said little girl is wanting slimming pills. Mum said, no, you're way too young for this. Said little girl at 14 wanted the very thing, because she's still trying to get now mum's love. We talked about father's approval. She wants mum's love. Mum would take herself away when the family needed her the most. Mother was in overwhelm, would take herself away, and that's when this little girl needed her the most. So wanted to, again, be like my mum, I want the pills. Thus started then again. She hadn't realized, she didn't put two and two together, that, oh my God, another, and it's a different client, another reason my body dysmorphia occurred was, I want to be my mum. That's all I want to be. I want to look like her. I want to take her. She's taking those pills. When I'm overwhelmed and I'm going to go and lie down in a dark room, that I'm going to be my mum, that because I'm desperate for her love. So if I can be like her, look like her, then surely she's going to love me, because I'll just be like her.
That's why the examples are so good, because we can all remember parts of ourselves and things we emulated and that closeness we wanted. And all the things.
So find your part, find what you can. When I'm triggered, like, who is it? Hand on heart. It's like, you're safe, you're okay. It's okay. It's okay to have these feelings. And then with the trigger, if we can go, like, who is this? What? Who's upset? Well, I'm upset because my husband did this. I'm upset because the kids did this. I get the circumstances, but go deeper. Who's really triggered down here? Or, great question, and aligned with this one, how old was I when I first had this be bothersome to me? So one client needed a very tidy house. So she would come home, kids' shoes all over the place, toys everywhere from the person who was looking after the kids, and it would trigger her nervous system, because her mother needed everything to be, you're a good girl if you tidy up, you're a good girl if you keep your bedroom tidy,
Absolutely.
you're a good girl if you do this. So again, wanting mother's approval or love or approval. And so in that place, so when she got triggered, it wasn't that her husband was leaving his dishes in the sink, or the kids were leaving, shoes messy in the porch. It was, oh, it's a younger version of me that is going to get in trouble if you don't keep your house in order. It's going to get in trouble if you don't keep your bedroom clean and tidy. you're going to get in trouble. If you get in trouble, that means love disappears.
Yeah.
So we will do anything for love as kids, anything, even if it's to emulate the very behaviors around us. Even when somehow we know they're not the right ones, we'll still adopt them or adapt them and adopt them because we will do anything to survive to get love.
Wow. Yes. That's the yes, many, many, many layers deep. Oh, Sand, I mean, this was all just so beautiful and just so many, I think, points of connection and beautiful messages to carry us in the now, but carry us forward. And I'm thinking of so many women in my mind. So I'm excited for how far this episode goes. I want you to say a word before we leave about your breathwork sessions you offer on Tuesday evenings at the first of the month. I think the first Tuesday of the month, if that's right.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. So yes, Wicket. So how do I get access to Sand or her teachings? How can I be there? So, and she's talking about high-level executive women and how do I get access to her? So our ancestral breathwork journeys, as Maureen knows, they are totally free of charge. Our hashtag is No Woman Left Behind.
So good.
So it's literally a way of come and breathe with me, come and connect with your ancestors with me, come and get access to an incredible community of over 100 women that show up every month online to come be with us. And I will teach you how to breathe, how to release some of these somatic shapes and speak to the parts inside of you, connect with your ancestors. Come with all of your issues and feeling, terrible, or come with your creativity, come with the next iteration of yourself, and come and get the wisdom and the insights from our ancestors. Remember, they didn't just hand down the bad stuff, they didn't just hand down those toxic patterns. So our ancestral breathwork journeys, as you've said, Maureen, they're on the first Tuesday of every month. The doors open at 5:45. We start at 6 o'clock prompt till 8 o'clock. It's a 2 hour. You come stay in your own bedroom, your own lounge, your own room. You don't have to go anywhere. It's free. Bring your friends, and you will learn how to connect to your body through your breath to get more freedom inside of your physical body, your mental body, your emotional body. And you will meet your ancestors. You will get downloads, even if it takes 2 or 3 times to come. We always get one of the women saying, "I didn't get anything for the first two, but it was great. Your music's fabulous." I was like, that third one, oh my God, she was there. That's my grandmother who told me she's okay and told me something that nobody else on the planet would have known. So.
You see me, I'm getting emotional right now. It's just to think of this work and I'm kind of, as the emotions were coming, then I thought to myself, put your hand on your heart. Put your hand on your heart. You're here, you're alive, you're safe.
Yes.
You get to carry on this work she's talking about. So, yeah. So many thanks. Thank you for the audience for being here. Sand, is there any parting, any wisdom, or you want to? We've said so much. I feel like you've also shared so many takeaways, but anything that comes as a parting message?
It's a hand on your heart. I love, and then your name. I love you, Sand. I love you, Maureen, to yourself. And some women, even when doing that powerful exercise, have bawled and sobbed and couldn't do it because they've never told themselves they love themselves. So when you tell yourself, I love you, you're telling all of those ancestors that came before you, thank you, because of you, I'm here, because of you, I exist. Even if we have, as I said, not all of our ancestors are healed and ancient. Some of us have very different relationships with some of our ancestors. That's okay. I'm not asking anybody to bring in forgiveness when we're not ready for that. But I am saying that you have ancestors beyond that, beyond that, beyond that. So I love you, and then your name. And the last one would be, I am enough.
I am
I
enough.
am enough. I am
Yes.
enough. I am enough.
Oh, thank you, Sand. Thank you. I'm so grateful for the conversation and to the listeners. We'll see you in the next episode. I'll put everything in the show notes and you'll have it all. So thank you.
Oh,
Okay.
Maureen, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for having me. Seriously,
Yes,
thank you.
so welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mystical Sisterhood. If you love what you heard, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if it's on Apple or Spotify, I would be so grateful for a 5-star rating and review. And be sure to share with a friend if you're called to do so. To learn more about my one-on-one coaching programs and join the Mystical Sisterhood community, visit MaureenSpielman.com or MysticalSisterhood.com.